Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 369th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Gall. I'm a family doctor and a professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Alberta. And one of my colleagues has been asking to be on the show repeatedly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I've kept refusing, but here she is anyway.
Probably for the 25th time at least.
I just keep showing up.
I can't. And the security says I can't get her out of the office until we let her do this podcast. So, Tina, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure. My name is Tina Koronik. I am a family physician, a colleague of Mike's here in the evidence-based medicine department, part of the peer team, and one of the writers of some of the tools for practice.
Or just a few of them.
Yeah, just a couple. Yeah.
And this one we're going to talk about is kind of a cool one because, it goes back to some stuff that we, you know, very firmly believed in recommendations for little peanuts, if you will. And... you know, we're going to go through a process to show you that not everything you read is true.
Yes.
Yeah, no,
unless you read it in Tools for Practice.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Then it is.
In which case, it's absolutely
true. That's right.
Right. Yeah, so we're talking about peanuts, right? And the fact that when I was in training, and perhaps you fellas as well, we were taught that you, under no circumstances should you give a child under the age of one, is what I learned. You shouldn't give them peanuts or any potentially highly allergenic foods because you are just going to increase their risk of allergy. And in my mind, I sort of thought they would become allergic.
Right.
And now that's why we just kind of love this trial that came out that was asking the question, does early peanut introduction in infancy affect the development of allergies? Which is fabulous that they're asking this question now, which tells us we're really not entirely sure. Yeah.
And it's just another example of the, you know, problems that we've had with guidelines, you know, is
right.
That, you know, much of what is in guidelines is sort of best, not best guess, but it's sort of opinion based. And I think this is an example of one. And I was just looking up some guidelines prior to this podcast, and in 2000, the American Academy of Pediatrics, Pediatrics released a position statement stating that you should avoid cow's milk up until the age of 12 months, eggs until 24 months, and nuts and fish until 36 months in infants at high risk of atopy. And, you know, that it sounds like very clear that there must have been a solid evidence base for that. Otherwise, why would you say these things?
Why would you have different cutoffs for different food groups like that? And that level of precision, one is 24 months, but this one is 36 months.
Yeah.
And there had to be a lot of solid understanding of allergic disease to justify those kind of cutoffs and that level of certainty.
Right. No,
yeah.
Right.
All we can say is we're pretty sure at the time when these were written, they were having an allergic reaction.
to the information.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
No, it's fascinating. We do this quite a bit. We take a tiny bit of information or belief and extrapolate that to everyone should do this.
And it makes sense, I suppose, right?
Well, there's a mechanism.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it is, but it seems...
it doesn't even matter.
What matters
is we know when it's certain and we can give direction. And so that's more positive than saying we really don't know.
Right.
So, but now we do have some idea. So Tina, why don't you take us through this kind of, and really... It's a 640 person study, but it's a landmark trial.
I love this trial just because it's a trial I never would have even thought of running based on my previous training. It would sort of be sacrilege to think about this. But what they did is they took 640 high risk infants. So these are infants at high risk of allergy. So they either had severe eczema already, they had a known egg allergy, or they had both. So kind of the highest risk you can think of. And these guys were aged between 4 and 11 months. So none of them were a year yet, which is when we would, at least I always thought you could start peanuts. And they were randomized to either regular consumption of peanut protein or avoidance for 5 years, which is pretty impressive. So a couple of things that they did first that I think it's important just to put it in context is all these kids were given a skin prick test first. And so they tested them against the peanut protein to see if they had a severe allergy. So if you had a reaction that was 4 millimeters or greater, you were excluded from the study. So just to put this into practice, kids who have a very positive skin prick test probably shouldn't be receiving early introduction of these types of foods. And then those who went on, so if your reaction was only 2 millimeters, though, you were included. They said, come on, we're going to keep you in here. So everyone received that oral food challenge. And out of the, say, 320 who were randomized to peanut proteins, 7 of them had a reaction. 6 required an antihistamine and 1 required oral steroids. So even in your highest risk kids, none of them at the initial baseline testing required epinephrine or had sort of a life-threatening reaction. But and what they found is those kids who were randomized to early exposure, so at 4 to 11 months, they started having regular peanut protein, were significantly less likely to have a peanut allergy at 5 years. So your numbers were 3% versus about 17% in the group that was avoiding peanut protein. So the number needed to treat there was 8.
Which is impressive, to say the least, right?
Yeah, and it's shocking because, again, it goes completely against the theories that I had always held near and dear. That idea that early exposure increases your risk. It actually turns out it's probably the opposite. Early exposure decreases your risk. Now, these were high-risk infants. There is another smaller trial. It's not smaller. It's larger, about 1,300 infants who were normal risk, who were randomized to early introduction of different allergens. And this one didn't show a statistically significant difference between the infants. But the thing was, they were 3 months when they were entered into this trial. There were 6 different allergens. It was a bit of a complex regimen. And really not much. The adherence was really quite poor.
Yeah, I think that this one, I remember reading, because I liked the first one so much, they actually gave them a... If I'm not mistaken, they gave them a peanut-type treat to give to kids in the first one. So it was much easier to follow, where the second one was not really any kind of treats at all. Like they just had to give this kind of very elaborate different eating regime to get all 6 allergens in and et cetera. So it was much more difficult to follow.
Yeah. And it's a bonus. I mean, the bottom line is, even if there is no difference, it just shows you it doesn't matter. It's a bonus that you get less if you do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are the big trials. There's also some observational data that has come out, particularly looking at newborns who have been followed to examine when food was introduced. And what they found is, in those who were not given peanuts in the first year, they had an increased risk of being sensitized to peanuts with an odds ratio of 1.7. So some definite limitations with any kind of observational study, but again, sort of supporting evidence for this idea that really early exposure may be beneficial. And what I love, if you talk about the context of this research, is that the authors of this, the big trial looking at high-risk kids, really got their hypothesis from looking at kids who were Israeli children. So when they looked at Israeli children and compared them to UK children of similar background, they found that those in Israel had greater intake of peanuts and had 10 times lower risk of allergies. Yeah. So it's just observational data, that sort of that hypothesis generating data. You say, wow, that's interesting. Why is that? And so that's what how it was borne out in this big randomized control trial.
So somehow a cold, rainy climate is leading these kids to have more allergic disease.
Yeah, that must be it.
And it's just, coincidental that they're also eating less. It's because they have allergic disease that they eat less peanuts.
I like your...
Your pseudo-logic.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. So, lots of supporting evidence to sort of suggest that this is the case. And... now guidelines are switching a little bit to adjust to this new data, suggesting that, maybe you do want to consider introducing peanuts earlier. Most of the guidelines suggest you should, in high-risk infants, do the skin prick testing initially. That follows what the trial did. And just if they're really high risk, you know, maybe you want to consider sending them off to an allergist or someone to help you make sense of what to do next. And we looked a little bit, some guidelines out of the states actually talk about using serology. However, we put a word of caution that serology is not really recommended for testing for allergy because of the high risk of false positives. And so if you're considering, if you have kids who are at really high risk, maybe just consulting with an allergist is a reasonable way to go.
Yeah, I know. There's just such an enthusiasm for serology because of the simplicity of it, right? So a lot of people are drawn to it. But
yeah, and it gives an answer, but the problem is the answer may not be true.
Yeah. And
Never let that hold you back, James.
No, I know.
Looking for the truth. This isn't the X-Files. This is medicine.
Well, we pulled a couple studies looking at serology and IgE testing, and actually it was impressive at how it's not a great test. And just sort of reinforced, okay, that's why we're not really supposed to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that we looked at briefly was just the idea of mothers. So when you're pregnant, again, because there was a lot of sort of old wives' tales floating around that if you're pregnant, you should also potentially avoid peanuts because, again, you may be exposing that unborn fetus. Maybe that's a banned word these days.
Yeah, that's right. The CDC is not allowed to use that word. So we'll edit that out for our U.S. counterparts.
Yeah, that's good. Exactly.
That's the new F word, I guess.
Yeah, the seven words you should never say on radio.
Evidence-based, science-based, and the F word is...
You pretty much violated all of them in one podcast.
That's right.
So anyways, a large cohort study of about 10,000 participants suggested that there's actually a lower risk of peanut allergy in offspring of mothers who increased peanut consumption during pregnancy. So if you were having peanuts more than 5 times a week compared to other moms who had peanuts less than once a month, you had a significantly reduced risk of having an offspring with peanut allergy. So the odds ratio was 0.3, which is impressive. So
it basically says just when as soon as the child is born, slather them with peanuts.
Yeah,
or even exactly. Before that, as soon as pregnancy, just rub peanut butter on your belly. That's the solution to this, James.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah, I think that's exactly.
That might not be entirely science-based.
No.
but no less science-based than waiting 3 years for nuts and fish.
Exactly. Anyway, keep going.
So really that just falls with the current guidelines that say, do not restrict maternal diet or delay food allergy introduction in high-risk infants. So it's really just in the boat phase. I'm sure we're going to see more research coming out on this topic, which is fascinating because we thought we knew what we were talking about and we didn't. And so now we're going to see the other side of that.
Yeah. And it seems like, I know if you're concerned about a particular type of food or whatever, it's probably worth introducing like new types of food, not all at once, but maybe... You know what I'm saying? Just try every, you know,
making some kind of pablum out of a mixture of fish and tree nuts and peanuts and
right. And
cross your fingers. I don't know. That wasn't recommended, was it?
No.
But what I meant by that was institute a new food every few days.
Couple of 3 days, yeah.
Yeah, and just that way you can sort of maybe rule out one thing or another. We're probably never going to have a study of this, but it's just at least trying to use some marginal common sense.
Yeah, we won't want to push common sense too much.
No.
Again, this is medicine, so.
Yeah. No,
but,
exactly.
I think this is a huge study for us to know about as primary care providers and pediatricians and even to a certain extent, obs-gyne. To be able to pass this information on to our patients that avoidance isn't necessarily the best. And if you have kids who are extremely high risk, you might want to have them tested first, but others, we need to not avoid these foods, but in fact, start them earlier than the 3 years and get them to take it relatively regularly, because that's what helps prevent these allergies from developing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think, and you have to unfortunately deprogram people, because many people will be coming with a, you know, a preconceived belief about this.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just it. It's fascinating to me, the beliefs around this topic. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of the best evidence we have right
yeah.
now.
So. No, great stuff as always. So anything else we don't have to deal with, another particular issues of this tools of practice that you want to talk about?
No, I think that's the main one. We wrote an implementation piece for this where we talk a little bit about Canada. I'm not sure the Canadian guidelines are quite out yet, but the U.S. has updated their guidelines, and online they do have resources for kind of what you talked about, James, how to introduce mm-hmm. foods and how you might go about it, just practical, which we thought were reasonable suggestions.
Yeah.
We'll put
links to that in the show notes and everything. Cool. And I think we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.